interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Tim O'Reilly, a private equity-backed chief financial officer who's going to share his insights, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate being here.
Tim, as is customary on the podcast, if you could share with us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Perfect. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate you inviting me. I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and one of my great mentors, Adam, was on this. Adam Coffey was on this a couple times, I saw. So appreciate being invited to participate in a podcast that he's also participated in. My name's Tim O'Reilly. I've got a beautiful wife who I met at move-in day at college at the University of Central Florida. And we've since had two beautiful children, one eight-year-old son and a two-year-old daughter. I studied finance and accounting at UCF. I did right before my son was born. I was studying for my MBA, my CPA, and my CGMA all at the same time, and found out that I had passed all three right before the day my son came home from the hospital. So it was great relief, and then moved from there, started my career in public accounting. I found myself having more interest in the business than I did the actual audit procedures, and knew that I had some entrepreneurial spirit that I wanted to tap into. So shortly after public accounting, I moved to, I was offered a position with Verizon Communications to be a part of their finance transformation effort. So spent many years there transitioning finance-based tasks from corporate headquarters up in New Jersey to a finance hub in Lake Mary, Florida, and learned a lot doing that. Learned a lot about publicly traded businesses through the process as well, system implementations, you name it. From there, I was recruited by a up-and-coming software company, SaaS-based software company out of Tampa, Florida, a group called ConnectWise. And they were in the position to try to get ready for an IPO. So taking all of that public company knowledge and translating that into establishing appropriate controls, establishing what a company needed to do in order to be prepared for an IPO, and was blessed with some great mentors. Eileen Kamarek was the CFO at the time and learned a lot from her. From there, I moved to another software business. It was recently purchased by private equity when I joined. A private equity group based out of Silicon Valley had purchased the world's largest low vision and blindness software company, and had actually consolidated and combined that with another group outside of the U.S. and the Netherlands. So matched hardware and software together. It was a great opportunity, great way for me to cut my teeth with private equity, and met another mentor there who Rick Simpson was our CFO, who prepared me for my first CFO position, which was with Del Air Heating and Air Conditioning, a large, probably the largest in Florida, servicing the Florida markets, eight different markets we served for heating, electrical, and plumbing. From there, I am currently a CFO for Frontier Service Partners, backed by a private equity group named Imperial Capital, a phenomenal group that we've partnered with to acquire businesses also in the HVAC, plumbing, electrical space. And then one fun fact about me is similar to Adam Coffey and why we connected so quickly is I also am a private pilot. I ended up sneaking in a private pilot license in between my CFO role at Del Air and at Frontier Service Partners. So again, thank you. Excited to be here. Excited to help any of your listeners, hopefully, to make a connection on why I think private equity is so exciting.
I definitely agree. Private equity is exciting. It's a great industry to be in.
Gets some bad rap like any other industry, but is phenomenal and helps a lot of people, helps a lot of businesses, and does a lot of great in the world. Adam's obviously been on the, I think there's only Adam and Nevin that have been on the podcast twice. So bit of a rare feat, but Adam's story's somewhat impressive, to say the very least. So it was great to have him on board and talking. So, and always pleased to hear of another listener in the on the podcast, Tim. So thanks for listening. So what one mistake do you see either private equity firms or portfolio companies making, Tim, and what actions would you suggest to correct them?
Look, this is a great question. I think you ask it almost on every podcast, and it's a great question because, you know, private equity firms have had to evolve. It's not the same as it was, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, not even when I first started in private equity 5 years ago. These firms have had to evolve from, you know, the underlying mission, which has not changed, is to deliver great return to investors, right? So that mission has not changed, but the way we go about delivering that value or delivering that return has changed significantly. You can't, today, it's no longer about just buying companies and stacking revenue and stacking EBITDA. There's much more under the surface. These businesses are much more complex. The environment is much more complex. So a lot of that has driven a lot of these private equity groups to build out theses that extend beyond their hold period, which is phenomenal, right? It kind of goes back to the three Ps: people, profit, and planet. And where we used to see it being, you know, 1P profit, we've started to see a lot of private equity groups shift towards understanding people come first, right? People and processes. There's maybe another fourth P in there that we've added. And process is really important, as we get to later in the podcast, I think. But people is one where it all starts with. We've done a lot of homework to make sure we're partnering with the right people. I've done a lot of homework. A lot of executives in the space do a lot of homework before they partner with the PE firm to make sure that there's alignment there. So I do think, you know, one mistake that could be made is if you haven't evolved yet to understand that there it's a deeper, more complex space than where it was. And it used to have a bad rap, but I'll tell you, the groups that I've been fortunate enough to work with have done a great job evolving these businesses and making sure that, you know, you're not leaving value on the table because you're only kind of one track mindset. So, you know, actions I think most groups took to correct some of these mistakes from prior years is really, again, building out that thesis that extends beyond 3 to 5 years. Making sure that there's a long-term thesis at play. Businesses are long-term by nature. You talk to most entrepreneurs, they're thinking 5, 10, 15 years out. They're not thinking about just what's in front of them. So as a private equity group building a thesis, the more valuable and more value created, the firms that are creating the most value are building these theses beyond 5 years. What does that mean? It means, you know, what are the pieces of the platform that we need to build out outside of just M&A, right? A lot of private equity focuses on M&A. It's great. It is the lifeblood of private equity, but there are pieces underneath that create some sustainable competitive advantage that gives you more value in the marketplace on a long-term basis. You know, in our industry is, you know, making sure that you have a sustainable labor force if labor is important, making sure you've got sustainable practices to develop technology if a tech-based company, or making sure that you're staying ahead of standards, regulatory environments, those pieces, as well as making sure that, you know, you are reevaluating these businesses to grow organically and not through just M&A. We've seen businesses in our space trade for really high multiples. And the reason for that is because a lot of the private equity groups have invested beyond just M&A. They've reinvested back into these businesses to grow people, to improve processes. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest steps to correcting some of the you know, unfavorable opinions that some folks may have had about private equity years ago.
I've seen that change firsthandedly, and I think it's a really exciting space to get into today with a lot of like-minded people that are driving these businesses and want to drive these businesses to long-term success, not just success within their whole period.
I like the analogy with the set out with regards to, four P's and focused on that, and not just profit anymore, working on the other areas, people, and certainly systems, or should we say processes, for consistent P's to run with that. So yeah, definitely an important element.
So Tim, you've got a lot of experience in what I regard as the kind of business service type environment, which in essence includes for you technology kind of software businesses, but also what we kind of see as like industrial services, field services type businesses. What are some of the insights that you're seeing across those kind of spaces, but also what do you kind of predict from this space over the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, Alex, and again, another great question. I think any executive in a service-based business today has also had, we're going to continue to talk about the word evolve, but there's some key principles that have stayed the same for service-based businesses. And that applies to whether you're a technology software service or whether you're running a business that has HVAC, plumbing, electrical technicians like I am today. And it all starts about, it all goes back to creating value for customers, right? So you create values for your employees, for your customers, for your investors. And it starts by understanding your customers, right? I think one place in the next 12 to 24 months, at least in our space, is understanding the labor market and understanding who is driving that value for your customer. So you'll hear Richard Branson say this a lot, and it holds true to almost every business, is invest in your people, train your people, get your people excited about a mission that they're a part of. And typically you're going to create great value for your customers. It's not enough just to invest in your employees, but that's where I see a lot of the great service-based businesses going, is dedicating more resources, more time, more talent, more treasure, money to those buckets, to that bucket to really grow the employee base. So I see in the next 12 to 24 months, you're going to see a huge pickup in my opinion, in the service-based industry on recruiting. There is a need in our space for great qualified technicians that can go into a home, make a customer feel safe and that they're well taken care of. It's very hard to find that talent, and mix with that all of the skills and expertise that are required in order to fix complex systems in your home. Same with the technology space, right? Depending on whether you're a direct-to-consumer or B2B tech solution, you've got to be able to invest in the developers who are driving and look for new developers that have new ideas and kind of challenge the status quo of the tech in order to grow and adapt and evolve there. So peeling all that back, I think, big principles that are going to be key differentiators for service-based businesses in the next 12 to 24 months, especially with market uncertainty, is it's the time is now to reevaluate your business. And what I mean with that is look at your current relationships. So outside of your employees, you've got to build strong relationships, long-term relationships with customers. So less of the shiny object, more of something that will keep you coming back in both of these spaces. Service-based businesses need recurring revenue streams, recurring customers, in order to build that true value for the investors as well. So creating a relationship with a customer that you know is going to last long term, that they're going to want to come back to you, is important in this next 12 to 24 months and beyond that. That's kind of basic blocking and tackling maintenance items. But then the other piece that I see that's going to become important over the next year or so is being responsive and being in a position to execute. Usually in times of market uncertainty, there are folks who accelerate businesses and grow businesses, and there's folks that will slow down. The ones who are best positioned to accelerate businesses during times of uncertainty are the ones who are best prepared, right? So As a finance professional, cash is king. That goes without saying. Being prepared to make sure that, you know, you've got your treasury in order from a financial perspective is important to be able to make timely decisions and investment, invest in areas where maybe there's an opportunity. That could be labor, that could be other businesses that need help. That could be in expanding on technology that, you know, leading in and developing new technology that is going to position a customer to not have to make a decision on whether he or she's going to buy your software or ask for your service over something else. So when times are tough and you're faced with ultimatum-based decisions and you're a service-based business, you've got to be able to reevaluate and clearly decide that the value you're creating is worth selecting for a customer. One of the areas that I've found is very helpful in the reevaluation process for service-based businesses is it's not my thought. It was someone much smarter than me that created the four helpful lists, right? And it's something we revisit we've revisited multiple times at multiple companies. And it's, what's going right is the first question you ask. And then you make a list, right? You get all the key stakeholders in the room. What's going right? Let's keep doing that, right? That what's going right for the customer, what's going right for the employees, what's going right for the investor. Let's keep doing that. Do not stop doing that. Those things are working. The next one is what's wrong? How do we fix it? Is it something that we need to prioritize? Let's see how many things are going wrong from different perspectives that we all share. And if a majority of the group feels these are going wrong, whether it's a customer, an employee, or investor telling us this is going wrong, let's create an action plan to fix that quickly. Third question we usually ask is what's misunderstood? A lot of times, what we think is wrong is actually just misunderstood. We have a process in place. We have a value that we're creating, but it's just misunderstood by a customer, an employer, an investor. So let's make sure it's understood. Let's communicate that, recommunicate that in a way that makes sense and that folks are starting to understand. And then the last piece, and probably the most important piece going into times of uncertainty, is what's missing, right? It's very easy to pull back from investing when you're not quite sure what's going to happen to the market. It's very easy to pull back on adding cost or adding resources, but very important to not forget about what's missing in the business today that's going to catapult you to the next level. It's going to create value for your stakeholders. Part of that question then goes into, all right, if it's missing, where do we prioritize what we're going to add on this list, right? What is going to create the most value off of this list that's missing in the next 12 to 24 months that's going to create a competitive advantage for us and make sure that customers are excited about partnering with us and still want to continue to do business with us, even if they're faced with that decision of, I need to go without something. So very important. It's a great question. There's a lot of investment today going into this space ahead of time. A lot of private equity groups are also very smart individuals that are doing these similar things and making sure that they're staying ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear the chief financial officer focus so heavily on the customer and holistically across the business. So with focusing on a particular part of your career and diving into that here, Tim, with I think Vispero, if that's pronounced correctly, you more than three times the revenue, you more than four times the EBITDA. So keen for everyone to learn, what challenges did you face during that time? And also, what do you put the success down to on this?
Great question. So Vispero, just as a quick background, this is the business that I worked at where we were the largest provider of low vision and blindness software. Right. So what other mission could be as great as that? Right. So everyone was excited coming to work. You're creating a solution that helps someone who needs this software to function in everyday life or it helps improve someone's life. There's no better mission than that. Right. And so it was exciting. I mean, everyone was excited about growing this company, about finding different ways to grow this company. M&A was a big part of our revenue growth, right? So we had partnered with, at that time, we had five key acquisitions that were made. Some were in the software space, some in the hardware space. But M&A was a part of that pipeline. We knew we had a strategic plan, and we knew who all of the big players were in that market. And we were able to form some strategic relationships and partnerships to grow our overall product for the customer and put everything kind of in one package together, which was unique, right? So it not only did this help private direct consumers that were using this product in everyday life, but it also helped businesses connect to areas that they were maybe weak on for folks who could not see well or could not see at all. So part of that was around the mission, right? M&A was the easy part, right? It's easy to grow a business's revenue and EBITDA with M&A. And again, going back to the involved, you can't just do M&A. You've got to show organic growth in order to really show that you've driven value into these businesses. And that was the most challenging part, right? You've got to be creative. A lot of these programs were sponsored or subsidized by government funds. So every year we had to go, we had a great employee, Matt Ader, who is still at the business and is a huge advocate in this space. But every year and almost every month, he was in Washington, D.C., advocating for subsidies and funding for these types of products. So not only was that important in order to secure funding for folks who needed it in order to get these products, the other part of that growth was really around creative solutions. So what I loved about the thesis that the private equity Vector Capital put together for this model was that they were focused on finding solutions that we didn't have. All five of these companies were doing something great, but they haven't pulled all of them together. So the strategic focus was to pull all of these together to create a full solution, which created a lot of challenges to being creative, to getting people to, you know, think about changing some things. When you get stuck in, hey, we've always done it this way, very hard to pull folks away unless you've got a really good team that's gone through some of those transformation efforts. Another part of that, you know, a lot of that was focused on revenue. On the EBITDA side, I think, you know, it's hard to go in and just cut costs and maintain EBITDA, right? So a lot of private equity in the past had a mindset of, hey, you just got bought for private equity, everyone's going to be terminated and we're going to start over, right? That's not the case these days. I mean, there is a lot of diligence that goes into understanding areas in the business where it's appropriate to cut costs and areas of the business where that cost makes sense because it's driving value or it's needed to support the folks that are driving the value. So I think one of the pieces that was a challenge here is really understanding where the true savings lied and whether or not those were ones we wanted to go after that we needed to realize. You'll hear that term called synergy a lot in this space. It, you know, essentially means what saving opportunities are available in the business, or what through combining all of these businesses could we get better pricing on with our vendors and use that combined scale to get to lower our costs. So I would say that the shift in this business was more around pushing our vendors, taking our combined scale and right-sizing the costs in the business for the combined scale we had as a full portfolio company rather than just an individual brand. So that was a key piece to growing that EBITDA. The other piece of that was making sure that, again, we were investing in the right places. There was investment that when entrepreneurs are building businesses, a lot of time when it comes down to making an investment decision as a sole owner or sole partner of a business or a single member LLC, you're faced with, do I invest this back into the business today, or do I take my family out on vacation that they haven't had for 5 years, right? So that decision is a little bit different than a private equity group who says, hey, we've already got earmarked capital ready to deploy. A majority of that's going into M&A, but we've apportioned a piece of that that's going to go back into growing these businesses organically. Some of those investments allowed us to drive some of that CapEx and fixed assets that were needed, and some individual training for personnel that was needed. That helped us drive the business to greater heights and improve organic EBITDA growth as well. So a lot of value drivers in the market today. I think a lot of folks in the private equity space as well, strategic partners that are looking to grow their business through M&A, are looking for things that are going to create a competitive advantage. The way you create value, you know, not only just showing M&A growth and showing organic growth, but underneath that, going back to long-term strategy, is that's great. You grew the EBITDA in the trailing 12 months. What's going to happen for me in the next 3 to 5 years while I'm holding it, right? Or what's going to happen in the next 15 years if I'm a strategic partner with this business? So you've got to show that you're strong in areas where marketing comes into play. Are you a market leader? Is there still opportunities in the market? Is it saturated? Is there opportunities to train and develop talent and labor? Do you have resources like raw selection or other people who can drive getting the right talent into your business and do that quickly, right? Speed is important in tech, and speed is important in service-based businesses. Making sure that you can show the EBITDA is sustainable is important in this environment. And I think a lot of what we did at Vispero, a lot of what we're doing today with Frontier Service Partners is driving kind of those long-term strategies to drive, you know, not only just last 12 months revenue and EBITDA growth, but expand that for the lifetime of the company, right? So taking that view set of this is a lifetime company, this is something that customers are going to connect with, we're building long-term relationships, all of these components outside of just growing revenue and EBITDA in the last 12 months are important. And Vispero is doing well. Again, a lot of the sustainable solutions that were put in place have remained, and they're still going through, you know, that four helpful list to make sure that they're constantly reevaluating the business. So great question. It's important to know that underneath the 3x or 4x on revenue or EBITDA that's generated, there's a lot of work that goes into that outside of just M&A.
Sorry to interrupt here. Just a quick note to highlight our new sponsor, Grata. The private equity market is rapidly shifting to a data-driven, proprietary deal sourcing standard. Grata provides the window into over 7 million middle market private companies. Contact Grata so you can access the market first. Request a demo at www.grata.com. Now back to the podcast.
So you mentioned merger and acquisition. You mentioned it's fairly easy, so I'm going to challenge you on this easiness. I know plenty of portfolio companies, private equity firms that have been particularly challenged by M&A, whether that's the due diligence phase or whatever's let them down there. So tell us about your kind of, so just give a bit of picture. Obviously, Vispero, you made, you know, 5+ acquisitions, as I understand it. Tell us about your kind of integration process. So let's focus on that side of things. So I think that's where probably a lot of the fall down I see happens. How do you go about integrating multiple organizations in order to create long-term growing collective business?
Yeah, you called me on the easy for the M&A side. That's never easy, but it's the quickest way to drive, I guess, revenue and EBITDA growth. Before integration, I think it starts before integration, honestly. And this is where I think difficulty comes into play is you want to be able to move fast. We pride ourselves on being able to move fast, but through that speed, it's just like closing financial statements. You want speed and accuracy, right? The due diligence phase is the most important phase, in my opinion, to M&A, right? You're learning a business, right? You're creating a relationship. You're trying to close a business in 30, 60, you know, 90 days and learn everything about this business, learn everything about the process, the people involved in this, and make sure it's a fit strategically for what you're looking to accomplish. So, you know, I attribute due diligence very closely to dating, right? You're asking a lot of questions. You're getting to know this individual or this company. You're making sure that there's compatibility and on multiple fronts. Will the culture fit? Is one of the number one questions we ask. Will that culture fit in what we're trying to do today? If you're a service-based business, are you investing in your people and your customers? If not, probably we've got a culture thing we've got to make sure we iron out before we pull a trigger on doing a deal. Is that something we can overcome? Is it a hurdle that's easy to get over? Or is it something that it's going to take us longer and we may not have a 90-day integration process? It may be 180 days before we get that piece fixed. But through that due diligence phase, we're evaluating multiple areas of the business to say, to basically put a plus or minus on, hey, is this something that's going right? You know, for helpful list, is this something that's going right? Perfect. That checks the box. We feel really strongly about that. And then once we get down, not to be negative, but once we get down into the pieces that maybe are outside of what we would typically look for, then we start to build an integration plan to say, is this an area that we can help this business improve upon? And are they open to improving in this area? So, you know, one of the pieces with Vispero is the brands in this market were, you know, market leading brands, had done business a certain way, had developed certain technology a certain way, and had done that from the start of the business. So now we're getting all these groups together and trying to redesign, recode, develop in different ways, challenge each other. We needed to make sure that culture fit. We needed to know that these team of developers could mesh and work well with these team of developers. Outside of, you know, just, you know, making sure there's a fit culturally, it's important to look at financial statements, look at, you know, what legal risks lie in the business. Insurance is another one that, you know, often gets overlooked. Do the employees have better or worse benefit plans than what you're giving, what you have today? Is there some type of reevaluation you need to make in your playbook based off of the company you're adding? So a lot of that is matching. I mentioned playbook. You'll hear Adam mention playbook a lot. You know, a playbook for a company that is building a long-term strategy will often include areas that drive value, like, do we have the right software and technology in the business to be able to serve our customers the best way possible? And a lot of times when you're going through due diligence is, hey, we may not have the appropriate software. 90-day integration list, can we get that software implemented in 90 days? Yes or no. If not, then we extend out our plan to make sure we've got a plan in place to be realistic with that time frame. Other pieces, insurance, right? The reason I mentioned insurance is because you want to make sure you understand all the underlying risks, that either are we covered for that today with our current programs? Are we going to fold them into our current programs? Do we need to reevaluate our programs based off of the new business that we're adding in? So all of those pieces have to be evaluated in that due diligence phase before you get to integration. Once that paper is signed and you've acquired the business, the next 24 hours are the most important hours post due diligence in that integration phase to make sure you've got a clear communication plan. Internal communication is key on these, making sure that all the employees are there, present, have heard the same message is really important. It's the difference between kickstarting an integration and change-based conversations to a positive outcome versus, with poor communication, there's this uncertainty, maybe a little bit of animosity. Hey, there's a new guy coming in. Is my job in jeopardy? What's going to change? We've always done things a certain way. So getting ahead of that and having a good communication plan within the 24-hour period after close is really important. Following that kind of internal communication and making sure everyone understands why we partnered together and what we're planning to do and what the mission is then to start to go and again, go back through the first two P's, processing people and understanding. Hopefully we did all of our homework and due diligence to highlight the areas of process, systems, and people that we need to help us change or make changes. And then change is the hardest subject of all, right? The hardest part of the integration is, and I liken this to, you know, being in a canoe. I had great friends who were in crew growing up through high school. And so I liken the CEO to a coxswain in a boat, and they're having to communicate mission, communicate changes that need to be made. And you're going to have various people in your boat, right? Some folks are going to be disappointed that you're changing the direction we're rowing, right? And some of those folks are going to most of them are going to probably row harder in the opposite direction of where you're telling them to go. Some folks right on day one are going to jump on and say, man, I believe in the mission. This is fantastic. We've been waiting for that. They're going to turn around in the boat, row the right direction, or row the direction you're trying to get everyone named to. And then you're going to have two other types of situations that are difficult situations that you just got to manage through, and you've got to have good action plans in place for it. Some people are going to, on their own, say, this isn't the boat for me. I'm jumping out of the boat, right? And that's okay. So you want to make sure you've got a culture that's supporting the mission. On the other side of that is there may be people that don't belong in the boat, and that's the most difficult situation that you're going to get into is, you know, who doesn't belong in the boat? Who are folks that are actively driving the business away from change that's needed, right? So a lot of that comes back to communication. We've been very fortunate, Frontier Service Partners. We've got a lot of great people that believed in the mission, great communication up front, great private equity group, Imperial Capital out of Toronto. Did a great job just making sure that the mission was communicated. And so happy to say we've got a lot of folks rowing in the same direction. Now we're on to we're trying to take the canoe and make it a speedboat, right? So putting in, you know, processes, systems, and investing in talent to kind of create the motor to speed up the process or add additional companies or folks to the platform. So again, it's like you said, it's not easy. There's a lot of work that goes into the front end and due diligence that makes the integration easier. And we'll get to this in my favorite books, but there's a great book that I love that is great about just kind of what's important in the first 90 days after any type of change, whether it's an integration of buying a new business or it's a big rollout, big change, big software change, what's important in those first 90 days.
We mentioned about books. Classic question for me is about influences. So let's jump into it as you've nicely guided us into that. What are your influences? What would you recommend others read? What to listen?
Well, Adam did not pay me to do this, but it's the absolute best book in the space, especially for folks who are in the HVAC, plumbing, electrical business, the industry I'm in today. This book was fantastic, recommended to me by a close mentor of mine. And Adam has two books out. Private Equity Playbook is a book that if you haven't read it and you're in the private equity space or you're interested in private equity and what that's all about, it is the in essence it's the manual to private equity. He had another book called The Exit Strategy Playbook, which is also phenomenal. It goes into a little bit more depth once you're an entrepreneur or you're an executive at the stage of where you're potentially going to exit, whether that's sell to a private equity group or sell to a strategic partner. It's an excellent book to understand mechanics of that. And it's a great way to kind of break it down. And he does a phenomenal job of kind of telling it through a story and through his own experiences that kind of draws you in. It's a lot of books on private equity that you've read in the past aren't like this book. It's an entertaining, exciting, hard to put down book. I would say both books, if you got a 2 or 3 hour flight, you can get those knocked out pretty easy. It's an easy read and great content. One of my key staple books, I have everyone who has worked for me or worked with me I highly recommend this book. It's Stephen Covey's 7 Habits to Highly Effective People. A lot of business, as we've talked about, is it's important to understand how to change a business, how to evolve a business, how to adapt, how to execute. Very hard to do that if you don't know how to be effective yourself. This book does a great job. One of the key habits in there that I think are often overlooked, is to seek to understand others' perspectives before your own, right? That to be understood or have your perspective understood. And that's important when you're trying to transform a business and effectively change a business or get folks to row in that same direction with you on that canoe. The one we talked about during the integration topic was Michael Watkins has a great book called The First 90 Days. It was given to me by my mentor, Rick Simpson, phenomenal CFO, very experienced in the private equity space, has done a number of transactions and gave me this book and said this was kind of your template to making sure that you're successful in the first 90 days of anything, right? Whether that's starting a new job as an executive with a private equity group or a strategic group, whether that's buying a new business, whether that's implementing a new software, the fundamental strategy laid out in the first 90 days is critical information, great content to making sure that you have the most impact you can and get off on the right foot. Another one that, you know, the book title sounds funny, but I absolutely love the content behind it is Ken Blanchard, head road, the 1 minute manager. This is really important for executives that are part of a high-paced private equity group. It's something I still continue to struggle with because I, to some extent, am a perfectionist and want things done a certain way. But it's really about investing in your people and pushing back to your people to become more solution-oriented employees versus problem. I've always got a problem. I'm not coming to you with a solution. Instead of having conversations where a problem's just presented, it's let's have a problem presented, but have you thought through what kind of solutions we could put in place before you came to me, right? So it's that pushback of before we have this conversation, I want you to think first, how do you think we should solve this from your perspective? You seem to be in the best seat to help and have a strong perspective. Let's make sure that I want to make sure that I'm evaluating what solution you may already have in place. That's helped me significantly to reduce meeting times. We get through meetings a lot faster, so would highly recommend that. It's also an easy read. I would say you could probably read that one in an hour on a plane. Fantastic read. I'm going to maybe list two personal books that are maybe less business, but still kind of tie back into becoming overall just kind of developing folks and developing yourself. But I guilty as charged, love Chip and Joanna Gaines. I'm on the side, my wife and I do a lot of home renovation projects, and we've absolutely fallen in love with their family. Chip has a great book called Capital Gains, spelled like their last name, G-A-I-N-E-S. And the title of the book underneath that says Smart Things I Learned While Doing Dumb Stuff, right? And so it's a very fun book about entrepreneurs and how taking chances, taking leaps of faith have rewards. So calculating, you know, having a calculated risk and just jumping in and starting to execute. They've built an absolute empire there, and it's based around that personality, that entrepreneurial pursuit, and it's just something that I think I tie into well. The last one is Ron Chernow's Alexander Hamilton. You know, this one for me, I was never much of a history buff throughout school, but this one, his story just kind of spoke to me and just the work ethic side. So I think in private equity, you've got to have a level of work ethic. I think reading Alexander Hamilton, the biography there, is enough to motivate anyone to work harder. So great story about an immigrant who came from nothing and worked his way up to being a founding father of the United States of America. And I know you're in England, so don't hold that against me. But again, just great, a great message for work ethic, right? So making sure that, you know, it kind of re-motivates you to say, hey, you know, what I'm going through today is not anywhere close to what these folks had to do in order to build a country. So great, just kind of great book, just to kind of make sure you're waking up fresh in the morning and feel motivated about what you got to get accomplished for the rest of the day.
Absolutely love them. Yeah, the all the first ones except for the final two I've not read, actually. The First 90 Days is a book we share with every candidate we introduce into a new business. The Ken Blanchard Woman and Manager was introduced to me a long time ago, and first management books that I read, and some of the great ones, classic Stephen Covey type stuff in there as well. So yeah, some really, really, really great books, certainly from there. So certainly love all of that.
If anybody wants to reach out to you, Tim, how best do they get in touch? How best do they, you know, drop you a line?
Perfect. I am an active social media user. I've got LinkedIn, Facebook, Snapchat, everything you could possibly imagine. LinkedIn's probably the best if you want to reach me quickly. Tim O'Reilly at Frontier Service Partners. If email is, if you want to send an email, if that's better than social media, my email's tim.o'reilly, O-R-E-I-L-L-Y, at frontierservicepartners.com. Open to anyone who wants to reach out. And I love giving back. I've been very fortunate to have strong mentors that have helped me get to where I am today. So I'm also looking to help other up-and-comers and folks who are rising to take key roles with private equity groups. Last thing too from me is, I think, you know, from all of these books and all of our conversations, I think, you know, three things that I found have helped me be most successful in this space is, you know, making sure you have the right attitude coming in every day. As an executive or as a business owner coming into these businesses, you've got to start, your attitude starts with you. If you have a great attitude coming in, it makes a difference. Other folks start to attach to you and you start to build that culture of positive thinking. The other piece of that is you've got to have work ethic. I think we've kind of hammered that one with Ron Chernow's book, but you've got to have a strong work ethic. And then everything else that you learn from your experience and your education comes after those two things. So appreciate the time, Alex. I look forward to staying connected. If there's anything I can do for your listeners or anything I can do for you, happy to help.
You've done the damn sight a lot today, Tim. So thank you. Certainly thank you very much for that. You've lost lots of value, shared lots of processes, loads of energy, loads of, you know, drive, and clearly in an industry you love. And thank you for being in private equity and bringing all the passion and drive you've demonstrated today, no doubt, into growing those businesses. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And as always, for our listeners, thank you very much for joining us. Should you ever need support with your private equity professionals or, of course, portfolio executive hiring across Europe and North America, please do reach out to us at Royal Selection. But till the next time, keep smashing it, and thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.